Pakistan suffers from the worst floods in more than a decade. At least 1,000 people have died in 2 months of torrential monsoon rains. How much is climate change to blame? And can the country cope with the resulting humanitarian crisis? This is Inside Story. And welcome to the programme. I'm Rob Matheson. Now, although monsoon rains are an annual occurrence in Pakistan, this year's deluge has caused the most destructive floods in most people's memories. Some provinces have received more than five times the average rainfall since June. The climate change minister, Sherif Rahman, has called it a climate-induced humanitarian disaster of epic proportions. She says more than a third of the country could still be submerged after the monster monsoon season ends. More than 1,100 people have died. 15% of the population is affected. 500,000 homes have been damaged or swept away. Bridges and roads are destroyed, and people are running out of food and drinking water. Kamal Haider has more from the Swat district in northern Pakistan.
Well, the aid hasn't started arriving in some of these remote regions because the road networks are badly affected, the bridges are gone, the landslides have blocked the road, and there are hundreds of tourists who are still stuck in Upper Swat. We've been seeing military helicopters going to and fro to bring those people out. Many still remain in those areas. And also the situation downstream is getting worse. We're told that about 336,000 Q6 is now flowing at Nowshera. And of course, the people that we spoke to here in Swat said to us that this is four times bigger than the 2010 disaster, which affected almost 20 million people. We also saw that hundreds of hotels have been washed away, obliterated. There's no sign that there was indeed a hotel. In fact, the raging torrents have brought big rocks, and those rocks have acted as grinders, decimating everything in its path. However, the good thing is that people were able to evacuate, despite the fact that this happened late night at about 2 a.m. At night. However, the people were able to get out. Now, we are told that people have been cut off. They need help. They need food. They need medical supplies. And of course, the biggest challenge will be to start rebuilding those roads.
Provinces in the south are bracing for more flooding as water flows down from the mountainous areas in the north. Foreign aid has started to arrive, but the government says it needs more funds. Zain Basrawi reports from the city of Sokhar in the southern Sindh province.
Along with a rising death toll, there are a countless number of people who have been injured in these floods. There are a countless number of people who are suffering from waterborne illnesses and all kinds of skin diseases. And there are countless displaced by the floodwaters that have been wreaking havoc across Pakistan. Now here in Sindh province, one of the worst affected, where humanitarian relief aid is the most needed, where the highest number of people have died and continue to suffer from this crisis. While there is help coming, while there are international aid packages and airplanes arriving with much needed aid, it's not coming quickly enough. A lot of people that we've met here say that they cannot wait by the side of the road for help, that they cannot wait and possibly die before any help arrives. They're packing up, they're moving into places like Sakhar, like other larger population centers, and they are looking for help themselves. They say the least they can do is take up some kind of manual labor, some kind of work, so they can earn a little bit of money to feed their children. People truly hungry, people truly thirsty, and they say they feel like they're on the brink of death. So the circumstances here are very serious. Here in Sakhar, at the edge of the Indus River, it is clear that the river is getting bigger. The water is flowing and the river is swelling, and the waters from the north are headed this way. So the worry for people here in Sindh province now is, what will arrive first? The humanitarian relief that they desperately need to stay alive, or more floodwaters? Zain Basrawi for Inside Story.
OK, let's bring in our guests. In Lahore, we have Dawar Bhatt. He's an environment policy analyst. Also in Lahore is Sarah Hyatt. She's a lawyer specialising in climate change policy. And in Islamabad, Peter Opoff, who's the head of International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies in Pakistan. A warm welcome to you all. Peter, I want to start with you. I know that you've worked in several different countries dealing with situations like this in preparation for them. How does this situation in Pakistan compare with what you've seen before?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on the program. Yes, indeed, I have been working for the Red Cross, Red Crescent for a long time. The situation we see here now in Pakistan is, I would say, unprecedented. We have been working in many flood operations or earthquake operations. The floods here are really devastating, and the force that it has. People were clearly not prepared, I would say, for such a thing. Nobody can be prepared for such a weather event, and the impact is huge. It's huge. And this is something that we will see for a very long time to come. The situation is very dire in Pakistan. Mm.
Dawar, Pakistan has faced severe floods before. It's had extreme weather on both sides of the scale, if you like. This is something significantly different. What is different this time?
Well, for starters, I think one of the significant things that we've seen is the change in the patterns of the monsoon. And this has happened over the last 3-4 years. The monsoon has shifted towards the south of the country, and an increase in rainfall patterns where the natural drainage does not allow the water to go out. It just accumulates, and you have these massive areas, about 10% of the country. And this is specifically for the south of the country, where 10% of the entire landmass of the country is underwater. So it's significant. It's what is being said is that it's similar to the last 2010 super floods. But in terms of the concentration of issues, it's largely the south of the country.
Sarah, even if Pakistan and the authorities had enough warning of what was coming, is there really much that they could have done to try to ameliorate the situation and at least ease it for some people?
I know. I think there's a knee-jerk reaction to sort of start blaming the government when something like this happens. But for Pakistan, the kind of floods that we're experiencing, even though we had warning that floods were coming, and at some level, perhaps the government was also preparing for it, but I don't think we could have prepared for what we're seeing right now, especially because Dawar said, the monsoon rains have been unprecedented. We've experienced, generally Pakistan gets about 3 to 4 cycles of monsoon rains, and this time we're getting around 8, and we're probably going to get more also. And there are a bunch of reasons why the floods are so extreme this time, and I don't think the government could really have prepared for this kind of catastrophe and destruction.
Mm. You say that there's a bunch of reasons. Can you just run through what those reasons might be, in addition, as you say, to the climate change that has been experienced?
Yeah, absolutely. So think of it like a pyramid of reasons. And the foundational reason, I'd say, is climate change. With climate change, with global warming, your clouds can hold more water vapor, which means that when they leak, there's torrential rain, and which is why there's more erratic rainfall spread across larger regions this time. And then, of course, changing weather patterns because of climate change, which means more monsoon rains, more torrential rain. And then we have glaciers. So Pakistan, or this region of the world, we host the third largest glacial ice mass in the world after the North and South Poles. And with climate change, because glaciers are melting and receding, we're seeing a lot of flash floods. We're seeing a lot of glacial lake outburst floods. And all that water is coming down south into the country. And then on top of that, this is like the first layer would be climate change amongst the causes. The second, I'd say, would be poor developmental planning. And I believe we are to blame entirely for that, really. We've been constructing on river banks, on river shoulders, basically just obstructing the natural flow of water. And nature will win in the end, and that's what's happened. So the kind of destruction that we're experiencing is part and parcel because of poor development planning, because of permits to build in areas that are sensitive to flood. There's been a lot of farming on floodplains, that shouldn't have been there to begin with. And then other reasons for the impacts of these kind of floods are, of course, governance challenges, a constant strife between the center, that's Islamabad, and provinces on who's going to be responsible, and a lot of government departments will keep shifting burden to other government departments and sort of shirk responsibility. I think that has done a lot to harm in flood relief efforts and for the preparation of floods. Mm. And that said, the political instability over the last couple of months in Pakistan has definitely exacerbated the situation for us. The nation has been so occupied between so polarized between political parties and the upcoming general elections that our priorities were amiss. Maybe, and I say this, there's a huge maybe, but maybe had our priorities been more aligned, we could have prepared better for these floods.
Mm. Dawar, the monsoon usually is vital for agriculture and for the growth of crops and the income, of course, for millions of farmers. Given the scale of what we've been seeing, how much of an economic impact is this going to have on the farming community in Pakistan, which, of course, is one of the key elements of the country's economy?
Initial estimates paint a very bleak picture. There are $1 billion worth of crop losses, nearly a billion more when you consider livestock and tractor losses, because those are key inputs or key ownerships within the farming communities. And then, of course, the crop that was standing, it's not just that's been damaged. For the next 3 to 4 months, this is a period when the wheat crop is sown. In October, the Sindh province has a wheat crop sown, which is then harvested in February and March. That won't be done this year. It won't be possible to prepare the land by then. Then there is a cycle for the sugarcane crop as well. The cotton crop, which is a big, big need for the country because we're a textile manufacturing country, you have these huge textile mills that need that crop, will now have to import that as well. So when you put all of that together, along with infrastructure losses in which are homes, roads, bridges, the minimum initial assessment says $5 to $8 billion. And this is just the immediate damage. When you think in terms of rehabilitation, when you think in terms of getting these lands in order, getting the existing canal system to work, because it's been badly damaged as well. Whenever you have dikes being broken, when you have in places that the entire barrages have been swept away, the small dams have been swept. So it will take a long while. To give you a sort of estimate from 2010, when it didn't rain this much, it was largely a riverine flood. The estimate or the end of what the flood commission of the government came ahead with was $40 billion worth of losses. So Pakistan was already, as Saras mentioned, it's a political crisis, and it's also in a situation where the economy has been doing poorly. Mm. We have a current deficit, and all of that together is becoming a big, big problem if you look at the near-term future.
Mm. Peter, I want to ask you about the amount of responsibility that organisations like yours are having to carry in this situation. Sara was making the point earlier that nobody could have been prepared for the scale of what was happening, least of all the government, although whether or not they actually knew it was coming. How much of a burden is falling on organisations like yours compared to the level of response that you're seeing from government organisations?
No, I wouldn't really call it a burden, because I think a burden is a very negative word as well. What we do as humanitarian actors and organizations is working with governments, working with communities to make sure that people are better prepared for it. So, and that is our role. Yes, of course, we would rather do other development programs, of course, because that would mean that actually everything works perfect. But it is the preparedness that we are working with the communities, that we also work with the government, what to do as a disaster risk reduction, what to do in case of a disaster, how do you respond? For example, how do you do first aid? Everybody learning first aid, but also like if there's a flood, what is the reaction that you have to do? How do you get to higher grounds? If there's earthquakes, what do you do? So, and that is the role that we play. And again, it has nothing to do with people are prepared or not prepared, as it is, as my colleague panel members also said. This was unprecedented. There's nothing you can do about it. And it is indeed a combination of rain and the warming of the earth and then the melting of the ice on the glaciers. So it is a combination of. But we as humanitarian actors, humanitarian organizations are there to assist, and we do that whatever it is. So now for the crops, as been said, lots of crops have been lost. Areas are still inundated, and it will take a long time. It might take weeks, months before all the water has receded. And that means that crops are completely lost. So what we do as Red Cross Red Crescent is actually coming in to assist the people as well in their livelihoods. In our appeal that we just launched for Pakistan, we do have a cash component in it, but actually is to assist the people in their livelihoods to start small businesses, to buy tools, to buy seeds, so the moment that the water is, has receded, that they can start planting again. Of course, we're getting towards the winter now, but we help wherever we can and what we can do.
Mm. Sarah, I referred earlier to the Climate Change Minister, Sherry Roman. She's also been quoted as saying, we need better planning and sustainable development on the ground. We need climate-resilient crops as well as structures. That makes sense, but this is not a situation that Pakistan is new to. It has suffered this kind of thing before. Why hasn't this been done before?
Why hasn't flood relief been done before, or sustainable planning not been done before?
Well, both, because, as I say, the situation in Pakistan is, to a certain extent, not new, despite the fact that this is on an unprecedented scale. One would imagine that some effort would have been made to bring in the methods that Sherry Raman is talking about, and yet she seems to be suggesting that it is taking something like this to put the thought into people's heads.
What she was suggesting is that Pakistan needs to constantly sort of prepare for and adapt to climate change, which is something we're doing to the best of our abilities. But at this point, I think now that push has come to shove, I really must say it out loud, we aren't really responsible for climate change. Pakistan isn't. We're just on the receiving end of its impacts, really. And which is why these floods have become are feeling so personal to us, because we contribute less than 0.8% to global greenhouse gas emissions. That's literally negligible. And yet, look at what's happening. We've lost more than 1,000 lives since June. 33 million people are affected. One in seven Pakistanis is sleeping outside in the open. And literally, houses, livelihood, livestock, almost 800,000 livestock have died. And like we've been talking about, I'll reiterate, I don't think we could have prepared for these floods. I think what we could have done is maybe we could have had better early warning systems. Maybe we could have had evacuation plans ready. And yes, I think that is a... it's poor calculation on the part of the provincial disaster management authorities and the national disaster management authority. However, if you'd like me to talk a little about what Pakistan is doing for climate change, I want to stress we are doing whatever we can with, you know, with the political instability and economic instability and the kind of population we have. We're the fifth most populated country in the world. Sometimes for the government, climate change is on the back burner. It shouldn't be. I'm definitely not saying it should be, but it does happen. It just sort of slides to the back. But we are investing in making climate resilient, or rather water climate resilient seeds, so to speak. Crops that will grow in saline water.
Sarah, forgive me for interrupting you, because I want to pick up on something that you have talked about. I want to ask Dawar about this. Sarah is making the point that that has been recorded in several places, that Pakistan's contribution to global climate change is actually percentage-wise very, very small. Why is it, do you think, that other governments of other countries which produce more of an impact in on the climate seem, if not unwilling, then certainly not in a position to be able to help Pakistan in situations like this, or in the preparation of situations like this? Because if Pakistan's having a minimal impact and they're having a more significant impact, one would have thought the burden should out of responsibility should actually lie with them.
Sarah's also already mentioned this, and she is completely 100% correct that it feels very personal. When we talk about the terms of impact, just to give you an idea, if you put the entire population of Australia on one side and you look in just the people affected, we have more people affected right now. And when talking about responsibility, Pakistan is bearing the brunt of all of this at only 1.2 degrees. That's a global average. And in the 2010 floods, the average was about 1 degree increase. Now, even a 0.1 degree increase means for Pakistan that entire monsoon pattern can change. It will switch its existing path from centuries ago by for just a little bit of average change. So this is what we really need to be talking about, that the emissions of the entire globe have to come down, and maybe even 1.5 degrees is untenable for Pakistan. What happens at that point? If we are going to touch 1.5, which is the goal with these net zero targets, which is the goal by for 2050 targets for a lot of countries, that it is an accepted norm that we're going to touch the global leverage of 1.5 or even exceed that. That will mean that for millions of people in Pakistan and countries like Pakistan, there will be no shelter. They will have to evacuate year after year. And when we talk about evacuation plans and everything, where do countries like Pakistan put 33 million people? It's not possible at all. It's simply not feasible for countries like us to prepare for such a big calamity. It's of course governance failure. When we talk about Pakistan being vulnerable or being among the top 10 most vulnerable, part of it's our preparedness, part of it is governance, part of it is state capacity and investments in climate resilience. But Pakistan simply does not have the resources. We would gladly spend those resources if we had. None of those resources are available to us or have been provided since the Paris Agreement.
I want to bring in Sarah there. Forgive me for interrupting you, but I want to bring in Sarah because she was anxious to make a point there.
Yeah, I just wanted to build a little more on what Davar is saying. He's absolutely right. But I think what the more important thing right now is, like he's saying, we are going to be this part of the world, Global South and the subcontinent, even Bangladesh, India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, we're going to be experiencing very high temperatures if climate change isn't controlled, or rather global warming isn't controlled. And that means more exacerbated floods. That means we will be seeing floods maybe worse than these ones. And what the government really needs to do, and I would like to tie in with your point about why Sheri Rehman really hasn't, or why the government hasn't prepared for climate change, I think it's pertinent, absolutely essential that we start preparing now, today, for floods that will be worse than what we're seeing right now. These floods are worse than the 2010 super floods. The next floods could be worse than this.
I want to bring in Peter here because he's quite anxious to make a point. Let me just ask you, Peter, given the scale of everything that we have been talking about, are you concerned that organizations like yours will simply reach a point where they cannot cope?
Well, it's difficult to say. I think so far we have been able to cope over the many years that we do exist, and each and every time we do adapt to the situation, and that is what we have to be as humanitarian organizations. We have to be flexible. We have to adapt to the situation. Yes, you can see it, and as Sarah also said, the situation is getting worse. 2010 mega floods and the 2022 floods, it's much worse. What is going to be next, and can we deal with it? And at the same time, we also have to see, like, 22 floods now today comes at a time when the people and the communities were already very vulnerable. We went through the whole COVID pandemic, which put a economical burden to everybody, to governments, but to the people themselves as well. So people are vulnerable already. So it isn't adding up to. And yes, are we reaching a point that we cannot deal with it anymore? I do not think so. In all the years I have been working in the humanitarian sector, we always manage to deal with it. It is an effort, but we do deal with it. And also, we are getting better to a certain extent because technology will help us better. We can do more with less that we did earlier on. But the point that I wanted to make as well, the discussion is like climate change and that Pakistan actually very low, but has the big burden of the whole climate change and disasters. The impact of it. I think instead of pointing fingers, yes, we have to deal with that. We have to really have to go to the West and say, look, you have to do more to stop it. But I think what we have to do now with these floods, 2010, compare what have we done in 2010. How did we cope with the 2010 floods? How did we cope with 2022 floods? What have we learned from 2010 to 22? How can we do better? And I do believe, talking to my colleagues here in the office that have been very much involved in the 2010 floods, we have learned a lot. We have actually have better systems in place to respond and to actually keep
people safe. Peter, I'm very sorry. I am going to have to ask you to stop there. I'm afraid we have run out of time, but I appreciate you very much for being with us. Thank you to all our guests, Dawar Bhatt, Sarah Hyatt and Peter Off. And thank you too for watching. You can see the programme again anytime by visiting our website, aljazeera.com. For further discussion, go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. You can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Rob Matheson, and the whole team here, goodbye for now.